Welcome to That's History, our regular feature where we look at current events and find echoes, parallels, and lessons from the past. I'm Chris Sutulo, joined as always by Jonathan Zimmerman, professor of history at New York University. Welcome, Jonathan.
Good to be here as always.
All right. So as we so often do on That's History, we're going to talk about sex. In fact, presidential sex.
If we must.
And there are reasons why we must. What happened in the news that has you thinking about presidential sex?
Well, what happened recently is that DNA testing showed that indeed Warren Harding had fathered a child by one of his many mistresses, in this case, Nan Britton. And basically the descendants, the Britton and the Harding families, submitted to this testing and found out that they were related.
So it was a little blip on the news, but it had you thinking sort of about the different ways in which that kind of matter was handled in the past. That was the 1920s, but going into the 19th century versus now in our CNN, Fox News, media-soaked environment.
Yes. I mean, as the Harding example shows and others that we'll discuss, we didn't invent these political sex scandals. But what is distinct to our time and would be very alien to theirs is the idea that you should confess to it, that you should talk about it in public. If you go back to our first great sex scandal, it involved Thomas Jefferson and a woman that he owned, Sally Hemings. In 1802, a frustrated office seeker, actually a former Jefferson ally, published in Richmond a series of articles about his relationship with Hemings. And it got a great amount of media play. Indeed, there were cartoons, a very famous cartoon reproduced over and over again showing Jefferson as a rooster and Hemings as a hen.
Wait, but Thomas Jefferson found a way to ignore that or not to respond to that?
He absolutely did. He made no public mention of it. And in 1804, he was reelected in a landslide. The same goes for probably the second most famous political scandal of the 19th century, which involved Grover Cleveland. While Grover Cleveland was running for president the first time, newspapers reported that he, too, had fathered a child out of wedlock. And this became a major talking point for the Republicans, for the people behind James Blaine. Ma, ma, where's my pa? And, of course, after Cleveland won, the Democratic retort was, he's gone to the White House. Ha, ha, ha. Mm-hmm. Well, how did he go to the White House? How was he able to survive this? Well, back then, the way he was able to survive it was by ignoring it. He later gave an interview in which he said, we had to follow the policy of not cringing. It was the only way to go. So privately, he let his aides tell reporters that he was taking care of the child. That is, he was paying child support. And also, actually, that he was seeing a minister. And I think that's interesting, too, because confession was still something that happened in private, not in public. And the same thing happened with Harding. You know, most people knew that this was true. And indeed, Harding paid considerable child support to the daughter he fought with, Nan Britton. But when he was asked about it publicly, he stonewalled. He said nothing.
Moving forward into the 20th century, Franklin Delano Roosevelt and Dwight Eisenhower both, I believe it's known now, had long-term relationships with women other
yes.
than their wives.
Yes, indeed. Roosevelt's for a longer period of time than Eisenhower's, which involved his driver when he was the head of NATO. But in Roosevelt's case as well, I mean, this was something that was well known by the press corps and indeed known by Roosevelt's intimates. And one of his mistresses was actually with him when he died. But he didn't speak of that, because that was considered unpresidential. You didn't air that kind of dirty laundry with your constituents.
So how do we get in a relatively short period of time, a couple of decades from that, to the Star Report, the blue dress, and it depends on what the meaning of is?
I think there are a couple of things that happen. The first, interestingly, is the phenomenon of televangelism. So we've had evangelical revivals across the history of our country, indeed, into the colonial era. But it was only with people like Billy Graham in the 1950s and indeed the rise of the televised medium that we had these revivals pumped into our living rooms and bedrooms. And the most dramatic element of the revival is the confession, right? I'm a sinner, but now I'm taking God. After that, a decade or two after that, you have the rise of what I would call the secular confession, which is the afternoon talk show. Phil Donahue's in 1967 and then many other imitators coming right up to Oprah, where I would argue the key theme actually is a kind of personal confession of some former secret, something that used to be secret, with a massive public, not just the studio audience, but obviously the viewers out there in the anonymous world. So you put these things together and what you see is a cultural shift in what's legitimate to air literally and figuratively in public.
So one of the key moments in this and in the history of sort of modern political journalism is Gary Hart, Rice, and Monkey Business. And the moment when a really outstanding journalist who had a great career asked the fateful question of Gary Hart, are you cheating on your wife?
Yeah, indeed. And, you know, I think what's important about this juncture, a few things, but the first is that eventually Hart had to admit it, you know, in part because, well, his hand was forced.
Right. Well, they staked him out.
Exactly.
They confronted him outside the townhouse.
You know, and there was no way that he couldn't address it. And I think that's more or less become the current state of affairs, you know, not just Bill Clinton, but, you know, John Edwards, Mark Sanford, Anthony Weiner. You can't not say anything anymore.
So during the Bill Clinton Lewinsky scandal, there was much sophisticated European eye rolling, you know, about, oh, you Americans, you know, like, how can you possibly take this seriously? And how could you let the fate of the free world hinge on whether, you know, a president in full possession of his powers and robustness actually acted on his opportunities? But there is an contrarian point of view, and you mentioned, you know, a couple of names, John Edwards and Mark Sanford, people who in their moment had presidential aspirations. Is it illegitimate to say that the way they behaved with women and treated women, and I would include Bill Clinton in this, doesn't that tell you something about them and how they would be as a president that is useful?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question. It's a different question about whether they should, you know, talk about it in public, but it is related. You know, I would say sometimes. Mm-hmm. I would say it depends on their behavior. You know, obviously we each have our smell test on this. But even though that particular sin isn't my own, I have others. I understand there are seven. And it won't.
There's a wide range of opportunities
exactly.
If you want to claim them.
Exactly. Personally, I'm not willing to cast the first stone just because somebody has indulged in that particular sin. But I do think there are different kinds of sins within that. And to take an example, I do think it's different to have an affair with a 21-year-old intern and a 40-year-old videographer. To me, that does have a different moral content and moral valence, but I'm not sure that the voters or most of the voters would agree with me.
That's Jonathan Zimmerman, and this has been That's History. I'm Chris Satullo, and saying as always, thank you, Jonathan.
Thank you. It was fun.